tell me where in the world is
Crying in San Diego?
Welcome back to another episode of Where in the World is Crime in San Diego?
Happy Monday, and we are exactly 1 week away from Christmas.
It came up out of nowhere.
Honestly, really went so fast.
I mean, we've been so busy. Thanksgiving just, you know, it arrived and it's gone.
I feel from Halloween to the end of the year, it's just like a blink of an eye.
Yeah, it's a massive blur. And wow. I mean, I can't believe it. And I hope everyone stays safe out there, that you spend time with your family.
Just a reminder, it is a high crime time in San Diego or everywhere. So if you're doing some Christmas shopping, make sure to lock away your things. Cars are getting broken into. People are getting mugged. Just be alert. Be careful. Be safe.
Even than that, like, people are getting scammed.
Yeah.
Whether it's gift cards, you know, prank calls.
Online offers. Yeah, just be really careful.
Yeah. So, anyways, moving on to what we had last week, our last episode, which was Terror on the Streets. It was a scary time for all the homeless residents in San Diego. Terrible time to be living out in the streets. And, you know,
we had quite a few people who remembered the story but didn't know the ins and outs details. So that was.
Yeah,
interesting.
And we actually even had listeners message us saying that, hey, they went to high school with this particular person, which is John David Guerrero, which is wild. I mean, to just think that you went to school with someone and next you notice, hey, they committed these crimes.
Yeah, you never know.
So we have a new week. Angie, you're still feeling a little off.
I'm still on the mend, guys.
I think I have a little bit of a scratchy throat now. Thank you.
My bad.
Hopefully it's just that, but I am up for it. So I took it upon myself for this week's case.
Thank you, by the way.
You're welcome. I like getting your reaction. So I'm
excited because I have zero clue. Like, usually I have like a little bit of a background. This one, I have no idea what we're getting into.
Yeah. And, this one I think is really cool because, it ends somewhat with closure, you know?
Okay.
So it does have a good ending to it.
It took some time, though.
But here we go. So first things first, the name of our episode is Warren Didn't Take This to the Grave. Our sources: NBC7, San Diego Union Tribune, Times of San Diego, sdsheriffs.gov, cnn.com, oxygen.com, and cbsnews.com. Disclaimer for this week, we have murder, and it's stabbing is what we have. So let's jump right into it. Let me introduce to you Diane Lindon. Diane was a single mother. She had a son who was 2 years old, and they both lived in an apartment in Santee, which is East County, about 20 minutes away from downtown San Diego. And it's primarily like open country, kind of a little more open land.
Okay.
So let's take you back to 1988. This is the year I was born. that's how far away this is. So like I said, Diane, she was in Santee and she had a job. Her job, it was the called at the time in 1988, it was called San Diego Transit Corporation, which what we know to as today as DMTS. If you ride the trolley, if you ride the bus, the big red bus in downtown San Diego, that's what it is now. It's called MTS. So Diane has a sister. Her name is Victoria. And Victoria remembers Diane as saying that they did a lot of things together. They were in clubs together. They did skiing together. They were together all the time. Kind of like you and your sister. It's a little scary.
It's normal.
Yeah. But Diane was also described as being a goofy, funny person. She loved to draw. she learned how to play the violin and the guitar, and she was good at it, which is pretty amazing because, I mean, the violin to me seems like a way more difficult instrument to play than the guitar because I used to play guitar.
Yeah, it is.
One other thing that she liked doing was in El Cajon, which is not too far from her home in Santee, is those stock car races at the El Cajon Speedway. So it's like, it's not NASCAR, but it's more of like the, you do it on your free time, but you do race your own car. And it's a lot of people like enjoying those. So she liked doing that on her free time.
Oh, she had a lot of interest.
She did. So it's May 2nd, 1988. Diane was a no-show for her shift. Now, through investigation, it came out that she drove her car and she had people that she would carpool with to go to work. So it was really strange that out of this day, it was a Monday on May 2nd, 1988, that she didn't call, notified people that she was picking up that, hey, like, I'm running behind, I'm calling in or anything, right? So towards the afternoon, one of her coworkers' friends decides to go over to her apartment, which is on Graves Avenue and Prospect Way in Santee, which the Santee drive-in is not too far from there. So when they arrive, they go into the house, they try to knock. There's no one at the door. But somehow they make their way in. And I couldn't figure out how exactly they got in. I don't know if it was like the landlord that let them in or if their friend had an extra key, but they entered the apartment. Upon entering the apartment, they noticed that her son, which is Mark Beyer, who's two, was wandering around the apartment, which is like, okay, so the son's here. Where is Diane? Then they approach towards the bedroom, and in the bedroom is where they find Diane's naked, lifeless body. As they approach, there's a bunch of blood. She has a bunch of stab wounds all over her chest. Her head has wounds. And now this has turned into an investigation. It turned into a homicide. Through investigation, the police see that she had been bludgeoned to death. She had been stabbed to death. And likely what caused her death was that she was stabbed in the chest. So then now we're like, okay, who's the person of interest? Who could it be? Any leads, right? So they start asking the neighbors, did you hear anything? Did you see anything strange? Anything out of normal? And they're like, no. So the real strange thing too is that nothing of value was taken from her apartment.
So it wasn't a robbery.
It wasn't a robbery. Her purse was still there. Valuables were still left behind. I mean, it was just kind of like a crime was committed and that's it. But there was no leads.
But stabbing is usually a crime of passion, which means it's someone you knew. Usually.
Usually, yes. So it's 1988. So DNA CODIS samples, it's still very fresh. But investigators saw that there was, you know, samples of some kind of samples under Diane's fingernails. She had strands of hair in her hand that was close-fisted, so it looked like she did put up a fight. They took samples of in the bedroom bed sheets. Through investigating, they did not suspect that she was raped. There was no foul play in that. So there's no samples that were taken from that.
But that just makes it weirder because why undress her?
Well, at the same time, too, it's like...
kind of sounds like an MO.
Maybe she was getting ready and then this intruder came in. And that's when it happened. One of the things that came up to the family was her ex-husband, David Beyer, who by this time in 1988, David and Diane were divorced. They did have a rough marriage. It did get confrontational. So they suspected David as being the prime suspect. Through an alibi, he was cleared. But David was super distraught with the whole finding out that his ex-wife had been murdered. because he was hoping for them to get back together because of their son, Mark.
Like a reconciliation.
Yeah. But he was completely unconsolable. Headspace was not good. So with all this going on, the police department came to a standstill. The case went cold. They had no leads whatsoever. They searched all ends, all possibilities, and they were left just scratching their head. Like, where's our suspect? Who could this be? We have a cold case. Mike Beyer was adopted by a family member, or family friend, actually, excuse me. And he would see his biological grandparents and biological family as often as he could. But he's quoted to say, looking back, some of the struggles you go through is you feel alone because what you went through, you lost your mother. You know you have family. You know you have family who loves you. But sometimes you do feel alone all the time. Which I can only imagine the pain and the struggle that he has, because since 2 years old, he never knew his mom. He has very, very to little, no memories of his mother. The only memories that he has is the ones that are shared from his family. So let's jump to 2000. DNA technology has advanced to helping solve some cold cases. So detectives, they take the samples that they had from the crime scene and they run them through a database to see if anything comes up. Nothing comes up. They're left cold. Let's advance 10 years. 2010. The samples once again were taken to a lab, run through a system, and this is where both the material from underneath the fingernails and the strands of hair were an identical match, meaning that it was the same suspect. They belong to the same person, right? Police ran the DNA samples through CODIS, but no matches were found. Jump to 2020, where another analysis team tested it with genealogy and ancestry to reach out for relatively close relatives. Mm-hmm. So like you're talking about like 23andMe, Ancestry.com, they use those kind of databases. And this is where they hit a match. There is something close there. So detectives reach out to over 1,300 relatives of this genealogy match. This is an extensive and grueling process with a lot of man hours, a lot of years to work with, right? A name pops up. Warren Robertson. Now, Warren Robertson had no violent crimes. He only had minor offenses. So we're talking about like shoplifting, bar fights, speeding tickets, traffic tickets. Okay. So there was no investigation.
No violent past, no red flags.
Nothing that would have stuck out to the police, right? Warren was born in Arkansas. And then he moved his family to California. He actually lived next to Diane's apartment. He was a fan of stock car racing. So he would actually go to El Cajon, the race speedway. So chances are he actually ran into Diane.
Like they knew each other either from living next door or from the stock cars.
Exactly. So those are already matching as it is, right?
How old was he?
So at the time of the crime, he was 27 years old. He was actually 2 years younger than Diane. He worked as a tow truck driver. And, you know, police never questioned him, which I think is really strange. Maybe he did throw the alibi of saying, hey, you know, I was out working. So once the police are like, okay, he was out working, he's a truck driver, he's not a suspect. I would figure that's what happened. So a few months after the actual initial crime in May 2nd, Warren moved from Santee to Lakeside, which is not too far. And not too long after, he left his family and moved to Indiana. Police were certain that Warren was their prime suspect, but what they needed was a DNA sample from one of his children. And when you ask for these DNA samples from a relative, you can't just force it from them. They have to actually volunteer.
Give consent. Yeah.
Give consent. And thankfully, one of the children gave consent and they were able to get an actual DNA sample. By this time, more than 30 years have gone by. We're talking about 32 years have gone by since the actual crime has taken place. After a couple months, they got the results of the DNA test. It was an instant match. Warren Robertson is their prime suspect.
Bingo.
Bingo. So what's next?
They have to track him down.
They have to track him down and then bring him to justice. Well, this is where it gets tough. Unfortunately, Warren died in a house fire in November of 1999.
Oh, dang.
So 11 years after the actual crime, he died in an accident. In March of 2022, this is where police announced that they found the person responsible for Diane's murder, and which was Warren Robertson. Victoria was present to give a statement, and her statement was thanking the police department for so much hard work and never giving up on these cold cases, that she can rest assured knowing that the person responsible is Warren Robertson and that they can at least have some type of closure. And it's still very hard because, you know, justice never was really served, but at least knowing you're putting a person to the crime at least makes you know that, hey, one, this is the person, and two, they're no longer on the streets.
Yeah.
Mike Beyer wasn't present at the press conference, but he was on a video press conference thanking the police and having, you know, the same feelings as what his aunt did. By this time, Mike was 36 years old. And I can't imagine not having a mother for your whole entire life. It's really difficult.
Yeah, and nothing's ever going to bring that back. There's no justice to that.
And his father, his biological father, wasn't ever really around because of the whole situation of Diane being murdered. He just wasn't in that right headspace.
He was raised by family.
He was still raised by family, but not his biological parents, which is still really rough. I think what's really cool is that this case was the fifth case in San Diego County that's been solved by CODIS.
By the genealogy, yeah.
Yeah. So it's looking more true that, you know, I mean, this whole DNA samples nowadays that are collected, they can lead to actual solving these cold cases. It just takes time.
It's a lot of manpower, a lot of hours.
Yeah. And, you know, so
I think that's why we don't hear it as common, but the fact that it is getting used and there is hope that it might speed up along the way is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's really kind of, it's interesting. It's a little scary, I think, at times. Because you're like, oh, you know, what if my DNA sample happens to be at the scene of the crime, of a crime? And it's like, oh, we found your DNA. It's like, oh my gosh, like, what are you going to do? Obviously, I don't have anything to worry about because I didn't commit no crime.
Yeah. What's specific enough to be able to tell if you're related to someone, but whose it is exactly?
Yes.
So.
And that's the whole process, which I still don't understand necessarily, but it's like, it's a lot of work. So if anyone out there knows anything about genealogy, reach us out because I would like to learn more.
So I have a question. If you were to get approached that someone in your family may be a murderer and they need your DNA to prove it, would you give your sample?
I would.
Even if it meant turning in your own family member?
Yeah. You know, because it's like, I wouldn't want to have anyone to go through anything like this, let alone if it's my family member that's, it's like, especially for us, we're like true crime junkies, right?
Yeah.
And having to, that bad conscience in your head saying that, my sibling or my cousin is a murderer, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. I wouldn't be able to hold that secret.
I wonder what you guys think. Let us know your answers. I can kind of see the devil's advocate being like, do you really turn on your family? Like that whole like loyalty thing. But then also, yeah, like I wouldn't be okay hiding someone.
I kind of feel like you would still keep it a secret.
I don't think I could, because if you find out, it's even worse because you're an accomplice to that. Mm-hmm. So on a selfish aspect, I think I would just like wipe my hands.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has to own up to their mistakes.
Every man for themselves. Oh, yeah, that too. Well, that's all you.
So paying our respects to Diane, Dawn, and that she may rest in peace, and that her son, Mike Byer, has good closure, and the rest of her family. So
we are going to put a small pause on our SBSs until the new year, just because we have a lot going on. And we're not feeling well enough to be out more than we need to. I'm pushing through, guys. I'm getting through day by day, but I'm not back to 100%, unfortunately. So by the new year, we're back to normal.
But there is one thing I would like for everybody to go check out before the end of the year, and that is the Santee Drive-In. So the Santee Drive-In in Santee is closing down.
After 65 years of being open.
Yeah. And I mean, due to operation costs and, you know, the streaming devices, they've lost a lot of customers. I still love going to the theater. I still love going to the drive-in just for the experience. Even during the winter, I'll still go there. One of our first dates was actually going to the drive-in.
We take the kids in their pajamas, blankets, pillows.
The whole nine yards. We're in the back of the bed of the truck, or the hatchback. And it's just a fun experience because, you know, kids nowadays never do get to experience the drive-in.
And the struggle of the radio.
Yeah. Clipping it on the window. Yeah. That's not that anymore. Now it's a digital transistor radio that it's really cool. But definitely, I recommend going checking out the Santee Drive-In before the end of the year. Go catch a couple movies because it's a double feature. You catch the first, then the second, and if you still stick around, you can watch the first again. So you're not out of there till like 3 o'clock in the morning. You can make it a fun date.
Yeah.
Bring your own food.
Family date, personal date, friend hangout. It's just a really nice experience to have.
Yeah.
All right. So make sure you tune in every Monday for your next dose of Where in the World is Crime in San Diego? Till then, catch us on the next case.
And in case we don't see you, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Tell me, where in the world is
Crime in San Diego?